Hey, I'm Danny Levy, and you're listening to Digital Transformation and Leadership. This is the show where we go behind the scenes with today's top business leaders to understand how they're digitally transforming their company. This week I'm joined by Stephen Sherman, Regional Vice President of ASEAN at Palo Alto Networks. Stephen, welcome back again to Digital Transformation and Leadership. It's been a while. How are you?
Very well, Danny, and it's nice to hear your voice again. It's always a pleasure to spend some time with you to discuss topics that are, you know, in front of us and the ever-changing world of IT and digital, I guess.
That's right, yes. And for those listeners that don't know, I interviewed Stephen twice in season two, and we covered artificial intelligence and the future of payments. Two of the best received episodes. So if you haven't listened to those, I encourage you, maybe after listening to this one, to go and download those and check them out. But a lot's changed, Stephen, since we recorded those episodes, and you've joined a new business, Palo Alto. And how are you finding the new role?
Yes, so Palo Alto Networks, I'm sure many of the listeners will immediately think of firewalls, particularly new generation firewalls. And that continues to be a core part of our business. We redefined that particular space. But a lot of people don't realize we are actually the largest cybersecurity company on the planet, not only for our firewalls, but we're in multiple spaces as it pertains to security. So, you know, we are in the cloud security space, a market which we actually defined. Previously, the analysts didn't even have a category for cloud security, so we're the leader in that space. And, you know, it's everything else from endpoints to application development security to, you know, the threat landscape in terms of intelligence. So we have an intelligence unit looking at, you know, imminent threats that may come. And in fact, we just had an announcement in the last 24 hours or so that we are now going to redefine the security operations center. So yet again, you know, we are going to disrupt a particular space of security that we feel needs a transformation, because it, you know, security has evolved so much, and there's a desperate need to take back control of the SOC, which is in fact what I would probably call the nerve center in terms of being proactive to get on the front foot to prevent threats before they happen. So, you know, so in a nutshell, it's just incredibly exciting to work for an organization that lives, breathes, and operates 100% as it relates to fighting, you know, security challenges. So it's just fantastic.
And how do you fit into all of that, Stephen? What does a typical day, week look like for you at the moment?
Yeah, so I'm based in Singapore still, and I'm the regional VP for ASEAN. So for the listeners who don't know what ASEAN is, so ASEAN encompasses Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, Thailand, Vietnam, Philippines, Laos, Myanmar. Where have I forgotten? There's a couple of little small places, but roughly approximately 10 countries in the South Asia region. You know, so you can imagine it's a vast area encompassing very mature markets like Singapore versus, you know, incredibly fast-paced developing economies like the Philippines, like Indonesia, like Vietnam, like Thailand, etc. What a lot of people don't realize, it's a geographic region that has over 650 plus million people. So it is very large, predominantly with, you know, 70 plus percent below, you know, 30. The median age is roughly 30 years old. So important demographics to understand, because digital is an everyday, you know, way of life. And because digital is an everyday part of life, security becomes a prominent challenge and issue that needs to be addressed from an individual standpoint, but also how organizations, the public sector and the private sector, engages with citizens and customers.
So yeah, it is so diverse. I think people often overlook that, especially when they're looking at Asia from the outside. You must be spending plenty of time traveling, talking to customers, trying to bridge that gap, I presume.
Yes, so yeah. I do spend a lot of time traveling, but not disregarding the importance of Singapore, because mm-hmm. Singapore is an absolute leader in terms of digital. You know, many of you would know the term smart nation. Mm-hmm. If I could sum it up in a very simplistic sense, smart nation is fundamentally about delivering every service from a digital standpoint. You know, this is the public sector, how companies operate, etc. So Singapore is a big focus, but across the region, to your point, what a lot of people don't realize, you have countries and organizations that have their entire operation in the cloud. You know, Indonesia has a particular fintech. I'm sure some of you know the name Tokopedia. Mm-hmm. You know, they basically have 100 million active customers online. So just put that into your mind, 100 million. On top of that, you know, in terms of their revenue, they equate to approximately 1% of the overall GDP of Indonesia. So this is quite significant. Mm. And, you know, importantly for our organization, Palo Alto Networks, we are actively involved with companies like Tokopedia in terms of helping them with their digital security, as one example.
Well, today we're going to be talking about a very big topic. It's all around diversity and inclusion, incredibly important as it pertains to talent and building out thriving teams. But just before we get into it, season three, I've been breaking the ice with everyone, asking about a 25th hour, especially interested for our leaders at the forefront, everyone's pressed for time. What would you do, Stephen, with an extra hour in the day?
Yeah, this is a great question. The extra hour in the day, I would try to use that in terms of personal development. You know, take that one extra hour to step back and to have a look at what gaps do I have in terms of myself, and what do I specifically mean? I work in an industry that is moving so quickly. There are new terms coming up, there are new threats, there are new approaches, there are new use cases. Unless you spend some time taking a step back and actually looking at, do I understand the area I'm in? Am I keeping up to date with, you know, the knowledge requirements, the challenges in the particular space of cybersecurity? It's very easy to get into meetings and be somewhat outdated and or not relevant to what's happening in the space that I work. So, I mean, the self-reflection and personal development piece, I think, is really important. But the other part, right, not looking at myself, is also looking at my team. You know, is my team happy? You know, are they being recognized and given the opportunity to have a voice? So this is a big part. You know, it's very easy to get caught up in the busyness of the day. Yeah. But what happens then is you often forget, have you reached out to a certain individual? Have you ensured that you've spoken to a particular person that may be neglected or doesn't have a voice? So I think perhaps between the two, the self-development, the external looking at making sure that your team's okay and the people element is probably even more, if not probably, it is the most important, because your team ensures that you're successful. So that hour to make sure that everyone has a voice, I think it's very, very critical.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. I mean, we don't sadly have that extra hour, but how do you keep that front of mind with your 24 hours in the day, Stephen? I'm really interested. How do you make time to get in touch with the team, make sure they have a voice, make sure they feel heard? Because it is so difficult, isn't it, to fit it all in. We've all got our kind of scheduled one-to-ones, our stand-up meetings, but how do we make sure people do feel heard?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's a discipline thing, but also you need to create a culture in the sense that it becomes part of how you operate every day. So, you know, your initial question was, Stephen, Stephen, you've moved, what are you doing now? Yeah. One of the reasons I joined Palo Alto Networks was significantly related to the culture and focus as it relates to, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion. I mean, so the organization needs to have this type of culture in place. The culture then defines behavior, the way that we operate, how we respect our peers, how do we think about others, how are we concerned in helping others. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, I guess in a very long-winded way, you can have the discipline, but if you don't have the organizational culture, it makes it very, very difficult. So I'm pleased to say the organization I work for, Palo Alto Networks, this is a key tenet of how we operate every day.
Yeah, and you mentioned culture. I think all companies talk about a culture and a mission statement, and everyone has to buy in. But I guess just now, going into the topic of today, which is diversity and inclusion, maybe you could give the listeners a bit more insight into how Palo Alto Networks is, how has it built this culture of diversity and inclusion?
Yeah, so there's the culture piece. So, you know, what does that culture mean? So, you know, I'll get into the specifics of what that culture, the definition means for us, but then I'll give you some little snippets that surround that culture. So, you know, primarily for us, there's three key areas. So it's we're very focused on embracing. And what do we mean by that? That we include every employee. Everyone has a chance to have input, a voice, an opinion. Of course, you know, there'll be instances where we may not agree, but the important part is you embrace each and every employee for their differences. Mm-hmm. The second part of that is commitment to our employees, but to the broader community. Now, the broader community are obviously our partners, which we work with. It's our customers, but it's above and beyond that. So for those of you who don't know, Palo Alto Networks, you know, we spend, for example, during the last 2 years, it became very evident that there were certain groups in society that were being compromised because of the move to digital. So children are exposed to threats every day because they're working, they're mm-hmm. studying from yeah. home. And conversely, you have elderly people, the first time ever going online to buy services, etc. So, you know, engaging the broader community, being committed to it. So, you know, we have, for example, in Singapore, CyberSafe Kids, whereby mm-hmm. we have gone out to the schools, working with, you know, the education department, etc., to help with training and making kids more aware of the potential threats. But then, you know, at the higher levels, you know, to give you an example, last week in the Philippines, we signed an MOU mm-hmm. with USAID and, you know, the Philippine government, you know, around how to train certain departments, key agencies in terms of policy, in terms of the soft skills that are needed. So there's an absolute commitment for us, not also within our organization, but externally. Okay. Which then speaks to the third point, lead. You know, we're absolutely committed working with these partners to show that, you know, we want to lead in this space and give back. I mean, the work I've just mentioned, there is no, economic revenue number tied to that. We just mm-hmm. feel it's critically important that we do this, that we create a society and environment where people, if they go online in their digital lives, they can do so with absolute trust and confidence. So, you know, if you work in an organization that's committed to embracing, being committed to it, and we lead, you start to see the culture around us, you know, basically gravitating to this type of behavior. And of course, it comes down to leadership. I mean, in terms of myself, every day, and I can tell you, the rest of the leadership of this organization is absolutely committed to this. You know, there are many organizations, and we see it every day now, talking about their investments in Me Too and mm-hmm. diversity and inclusion. It's very easy to fall to the side that it becomes a slogan mm-hmm. and only a slogan. I mean, we actually live and breathe this every day. And, you know, are we perfect? Every day there's an opportunity to improve, making sure someone else's voice is heard, making sure that we're committed to something in the community or with an agency or with a government entity, and we try to lead constantly that, you know, this is what we think could be done better. So these are critical tenets, I think.
You mentioned as well there just around a slogan. You really don't want this to just be a slogan, something that's thrown around internally, but people are not taking seriously. At the moment, especially in tech, there's a real there's a real fight on, right, for the best talent. There's talent shortages.
Correct.
Companies are desperate to get the best people in and then retain those people and retain the people that are already in the organization. How do you think diversity and inclusion plays into that, and how are Palo Alto Networks thinking about that, both in terms of addressing the talent shortage but also around nurturing that top talent and making sure that they feel, you were touching on it, but making sure they feel valued and recognized and I guess can see a clear path for professional development?
Yeah, there's a couple layers in this. So on the talent acquisition piece, you're 100% correct. Firstly, we know, not only ourselves, every organization has a critical shortfall in terms of security skills.
Mm-hmm.
So on that piece, we are actively engaged working with universities across the region, all of JPAC. In fact, in my geography, ASEAN, we're involved in every country with the education sector. So it's being engaged and assisting with the curriculum and training as it relates to cyber and to security.
Okay.
Of course, you know, we have an interest that the graduates do pick and join our organization. Of course, that would be wonderful. But even if they don't join Palo Alto Networks, we've left an important footprint in the sense that they are entering the workforce understanding how important cybersecurity is. And that's important. This is part of giving back and, you know, being committed to the broader community.
Mm-hmm.
Also, part of this is to start making, you know, I'm now talking about the Asian context. You know, in Asian culture, it's often the case that parents want children to become doctors and lawyers and engineers because mm-hmm. these type of roles are considered, you know, you're incredibly intelligent, you're also a success, and these are great things to, you know, to represent. You know, it's classified as, you know, you're someone special. Part of this is, you know, to make people understand that being a cyber expert, an SME in this space, is in mm-hmm. fact a reputable and highly important profession to be in.
Yeah.
We are doing work every day that protects individuals, the disenfranchised, the most vulnerable people that are online or in the digital world. So this is important. So that's on the talent development side. In terms of people then joining Palo Alto, so we have this term that's called flex work.
Yeah.
If I would describe it in the most simplest way, flex work basically empowers our people to decide how they will basically work. You know, I need to be 3 days at home or 4 days at home. I need to work remotely. We allow our employees basically to pick and choose how they engage, how they connect with their peers, and how they do their daily tasks. And we have seen this empowerment, you know, they appreciate the sense that we know that they're going to be responsible. Mm-hmm. We know that they appreciate the fact that we know that they have other responsibilities in life, be it may looking after kids, mm-hmm. have, you know, a young baby, you know, a baby that's just been born, you know, whatever the other personal challenges are, to balance work, life, etc., and empower them to make those choices. And we've seen empowering them and trusting them leads to happier people, which is critical. So flex work, by the way, has been incredibly successful. And I think, you know, I could say with a high level of confidence, this is one of the reasons Palo Alto Networks has been recognized yet again as one of the best places to go and work. So that's okay, the work environment. Now, the ongoing development piece, which is, I guess, the third part, it's also equally important. So that comes down to leadership and our HR systems, you know, recognizing where is the talent? How do we ensure that they get the right mentoring, the right exposure, the right voice that we can ensure that they continually develop their skills, their expertise, etc. So it comes, you know, back to this core tenet about embrace, including every employee to make sure that we recognize them for their skills and they have a path mm-hmm. to develop. Not everyone is going to be a manager or people leader.
Yep.
Not everyone's going to be the top technical guru, but giving them a chance to develop their skills, I think, is important because if we continually do the same job constantly, we do stagnate, and then we become bored.
Yeah.
We become, you know, not happy, and that impacts performance. So I guess they're the three areas which are really important to us as an organization, and we continue to refine this.
And I guess just, again, going back to that development point, I mean, also not everyone wants to be a manager. It's not the be-all and end-all, right? Everyone has to have a tailored development path, and some people enjoy working on their own and being an expert in a certain area, but maybe getting development paths in other points. I often find sometimes we try and shoehorn people into management positions, and that can be the worst thing, can't it?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Spot on.
Yeah. And you mentioned around the flex work, Stephen. Just interested to get your thoughts. I mean, a lot of companies have kind of been grappling with back to office, 2 days a week, you choose when you come back. I mean, what is there anything Palo Alto Networks are doing there to encourage, I guess, that collaboration and things that you can only get when you meet your team and you meet your colleagues in person versus doing things remotely, being able to choose and having that freedom?
Yeah, look, it's a hard one because you can imagine for the last 2+ years, everyone has worked from home remotely. And there is an argument. I've been as effective working from home versus coming into the office.
Yeah.
So organizations now, you hear this term hybrid, which has, of course, security challenges related to the hybrid environment. But there's a social element here as well, in the sense that, okay, you want to respect and acknowledge that the work style, if you want to call it a style, has changed. And of course, a lot of people now want that flexibility. So step point one is we support that. That's the purpose of flex work. But at the same time, it comes down to leadership and the culture whereby, you know, we're committed to this hybrid workspace, but at the same time that leadership is able to ensure that the team understands there are occasions where it's important to come in to have face-to-face discussion, workshops, brainstorming, etc. So that speaks to the, you know, the culture element. You know, I think it's really important that if you trust and create this environment where people understand that the benefits are also coming in, they will choose to come in themselves because they understand it's an opportunity for them to have a voice. So this speaks to the inclusion piece. If you're remote, is that true inclusion? I think, you know, getting people together, the social element is a critical piece in terms of inclusion, because in the room together, you can have this, you know, robust debate, discussion about a business challenge, about a social challenge, about a development challenge, whatever the challenge is, face-to-face is far more effective, and it drives this environment of inclusion, which speaks to the culture which we're trying to have. Being remote, you know, let's just from a physical standpoint, it does question mark the inclusion piece. But, you know, we don't say it's got to be ABC. We have seen so far having the trust that the teams know when they should be together has worked. You know, if you create the right environment that people understand the purpose of having to be physical in the same location, and you trust and you're committed to certain things, you'll see that people will behave in the appropriate manner.
Yeah, great point. And I guess ASEAN, it is very diverse. I mean, if you're trying to build a workforce for ASEAN, people will be in different countries. Maybe your HQ's in Singapore. How about those people, the ones that are outside of Singapore? Do they have to fly in? Is it harder for them to have a seat at the table? What's your thought process around that? I'd love to get your insight.
Yeah. So in my case, I'm fortunate enough that I'm back to traveling. So part of my routine is being in the field and being in the country with my teams. You know, that's showing my commitment and making sure I actually do hear their voice, because the added layer of complexity in the ASEAN or Asian market is, you know, having a voice from a cultural standpoint. You might say, Danny, what do you think? Please say what you think. but from an Asian context, it's very difficult for someone to truly say what they're feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, there'll be hidden cues or other mannerisms that you only pick up in a face-to-face meeting or discussion. So it's important for me to be in the field to make sure that my team in Jakarta, my team in Bangkok, my team in Hanoi, my team in Manila, etc., truly have a voice. I truly hear what they're saying. They do feel that they're being included as part of the decision-making process. In terms of my leadership team, we've gone back to having a regular get-together physically in the same location, so they get to spend time with their peers. And there's that inclusion social element, which, you know, I just spoke to earlier. So so they're the pieces. But I do encourage my leaders at the country level to make sure that the teams are getting together. And they are. You know, it's interesting. They've started to gravitate more and more back to meeting more regularly. So they do see the benefits of that and the importance of that. But again, it's not us forcing them.
No.
You should trust they know when it's appropriate and the power of being together. The inclusive piece, you know, the equity piece, you know, this is really critical.
Yeah, fantastic points. You mentioned as well around making sure that cybersecurity is seen as that really respectable profession, going into the universities, educating people, getting them into the security profession. I guess once you've identified that talent, once you've brought someone in, how do you make sure that their first 90 days is the most productive as possible?
Yeah, so before we even brought them in, I think the other thing which we recognize is if you look at from a gender standpoint, the IT sector has historically been massively skewed to the male population. So the onboarding process is we're very cognizant of this skew to males, particularly if you look at the technical stream. So we are very cognizant of this skewing, and what we are trying to address is that this does not continue. So so selecting talent, you know, we do consider, okay, this needs to be addressed. But once those candidates are on board, it's making sure they have a buddy.
Mm-hmm.
There is an immersion program in the sense that they have, you know, the technical exposure to develop those skill sets. But more so, you know, this whole discussion has been about diversity, inclusion, and equity. Is, you know, the person that is buddied up with the person that has just joined us sees that this is a key part of their onboarding process, that every day when they turn up at the office, you know what, I may be new, but people are interested in my opinion. I may be new, but, you know, I do have a voice. I may be new, I can give an opinion on a particular topic. Okay. I may be new, but I'm already being embraced by my fellow employees. So this is a key part. Anyone new that comes on board, we try to get them exposed immediately to this culture because that makes them welcome. It makes them understand this is a core tenet of how we run and operate. And this is part of why we're successful. You know, we want them to quickly realize you have made the right choice and if you've joined an incredible organization. You know, performance on the numbers and the revenue and sales, of course, is important. You know, we are a public listed company. But if you don't have happy employees that are recognized, that have a voice, that, you know, diversity is critical, we're committed to it, performance will lag. So this is a key part of the onboarding process, Dan. It's very much what we, you know, ensure is ingrained with as soon as someone walks in the door.
Yeah. Is that about making them feel safe? Making them feel safe, making it open, making it inclusive, and just making them aware that if they can say something, it might be quite naive almost to that, you know, them. They might be worried, but there's nothing they can't say and get feedback on internally.
Exactly. You're spot on. I mean, making them feel safe that they do have a voice. And it's important for us as well because, you know, we're living and operating in our own environment. Mm-hmm. We talk to customers and, you know, the government, the community. But, you know, you can become very blinkered. The opportunity of bringing new people in is a perspective and a voice we may not have considered. And this is the importance of gender. You know, if you have a very male testosterone type of environment, you know, I could argue it's kind of like going to watch the football. You know, it can be very biased.
Mm-hmm.
So gender equality is critical in the sense there is a voice, there's an opinion that, you know, must and should be considered because it's often overlooked. And often this voice and opinion could be something absolutely critical that we miss in terms of how we operate,
mm-hmm.
how we help customers, and how we fix problems. So, you know, feeling safe is critical to this, because if you don't feel safe, it's better I don't say anything, precisely. Which is not what we want.
No. I mean, that's also about the... Sometimes when you... A manager or someone in turn, if they come down hard on someone, it's not that they then necessarily even learn from what they've said or from that interaction. They just learn, okay, well, I'm not going to speak again.
Yep,
and that's so correct. Detrimental to the organization. And when people come in as well, they often, even fresh graduates, they come in, don't they? You touched on it, with that fresh lens, that fresh perspective on things, because they're stepping into a new environment where, as you mentioned, people get very blinkered sometimes in an organization. It's this way, this is how we do things here. And getting a different take on something can be a game changer.
Exactly. You know, we all have a need to learn. Well, not a need. It's important that we continue to learn. So, you know, this fresh perspective, it speaks to learning, particularly in our industry. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, again, it speaks to the culture of, you know, inclusion, equity, and diversity, because their opinions, these different people, whatever their role may be, it could be something critical which we've overlooked.
So we mentioned, we discussed diversity and inclusion earlier. You mentioned it, that sometimes it becomes this slogan, even if it's not, even if it's really a big part of the culture and everyone's bought in. Sometimes things get difficult when a crisis hits. You know, it's not then under the microscope as much. How do Palo Alto Networks marry the two, making sure diversity and inclusion remains vital when something unexpected happens?
Yeah, so it comes to being committed to those three tenets I mentioned: embrace, commit, lead. In terms of, you know, so you can say that, it, you know, is that a slogan or is it reality? So to give you an idea from my standpoint, when I do an all hands meeting or review on the agenda, this is always an item, people element. So I'm demonstrating in a consistent basis that this is a key area of focus for me. How are our people doing? You know, are we recognizing, you know, shortfalls? Are we allowing certain people that have not had a voice, a platform to be included? So having them on the agenda from a process, a rigor, discipline standpoint is critical. But then to the comment or question you had about a crisis, so of course you have incidences. There might be something that may not be aligned, or an incident, an issue that needs to be discussed. And we come back to the position, okay, what's the incident? How does this align to our tenets? And we decide based on these tenets. You know, if we are committed, you know, if there's an incident in the sense that someone has not been given a voice and a platform to feel safe and give his or her opinion, that needs to be addressed immediately, because it speaks to, you know, seeing as believing. It you know, there's nothing worse than saying we're committed to these things. We find out, you know, on a particular project or a particular initiative, a whole group of people have just not been given an opportunity to give input. So, you know, I give you a very simple example at a high level. We're thinking about doing a different type of offering in terms of some of our partners. That discussion, you know, I'm ensuring that all the different stakeholders and even people outside the typical stakeholders have a seat at the table to give their opinion. Because we just want to make sure I don't miss a particular voice that could be critical. Or if we decide to go ahead, it could impact their day-to-day work life. So, you know, it's important that, you know, every decision we make, we think about the implications to certain people that typically you may not think about. So this is important. Is it easy? No, of course it's not easy, but you get into this mindset, putting it on the agenda as an item that, you know, that you're committed to and truly committed to it. I mean, you don't back down and this has to be discussed. And they can be uncomfortable discussions, but you've got to be committed to it.
Yeah. Stephen, I've really enjoyed all of your insights here around diversity and inclusion, especially around how Palo Alto Network's really thriving by the sounds of it, at that kind of intersection between diversity and inclusion and collaboration. Thank you for sharing. Just before we close, I just wanted to encourage you to let people know how they can get in touch with you or with Palo Alto Networks if they'd like to find out more.
Yeah, so I believe, Danny, you will share my email address and perhaps even my LinkedIn profile.
Yes, I can put that on the show notes.
Yeah, that would be great. Danny can assure you, anyone that typically reaches out to me, I have 100% conversion rate in terms of responding. Now, you may reach out to me specifically more about how we deal with diversity, equity and inclusion. You may reach out to me in terms of if I'm interested in the Palo Alto Network organization. It might be around mentoring and training and so forth. All those areas, as I said, yes, I represent a company called Palo Alto Networks, but also this is about our commitment to community. If there's any way our organization can help with your cybersecurity needs, training, etc., I'm interested to help because a safer community in a world where your digital experience is critical. You know, we want to make your digital life safer. So please reach out to me. I'm very passionate about what I do. And, you know, one of the reasons the organization I work for is so successful, I honestly believe it's because it's an excellent and wonderful environment in terms of our commitment around the culture we talked about today. So thank you, Danny.
Thanks, Stephen. And thanks again for coming on Digital Transformation and Leadership. As always, I've really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you, Danny.
You've made it to the end of another episode of Digital Transformation and Leadership. If you're enjoying the show, please do leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. No need to leave a written review. Just clicking on the 5 stars is enough. I'd really appreciate it as it helps the show get found and it helps those listener numbers grow. And we'll be back again next week when we will again go behind the scenes with another top business leader to understand how they're digitally transforming their company. The Digital Transformation and Leadership Podcast is a Blue Aurora Media production.